You did not go to school just to eat lunch?
No, I did not.
What'd you go to school to do?
To eat lunch. I'm not going to lie. I just went to eat lunch.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host, Todd Conklin. How are you today? Man, is it exciting where I am. All sorts of excitement all over the place like crazy. It's been a fun month. I went to Bluegrass in Winfield. And that's always a good time. You got to like the bluegrass music, but I think it's no secret that I do. And that festival is a riot. Always a riot. Hung out with all my friends from Newton, Kansas. And places within the various terrain and locale. But great time is had, no question about it. And now, you know, it's back on the road, grinding her down as fast as we can, trying to make the world a better place for you and me and everybody else, just like you do. I like what we do. I think sometimes it's frustrating, and it'll make you crazy, but I think it's important, and I think keeping doing it is probably the best advice I could give all of us. So today's a pretty good day on the podcast. You're going to like this, because today we have a comedian, actually an improvisational comedian, but it's not going to be a real comedy show. He's going to talk about the art of storytelling. So this is Kent Whipple, and Kent is a he works at a place called Unexpected Productions. Let me get that out quickly. He's an improvisational comedian. He actually works at the facility. I think he's kind of the boss of the facility, or does the marketing and that part of it. Unexpected Productions does a lot of different shows, mostly improv in nature, always super funny and super good. They've been around a long, long time. In fact, if you've been to Pike's Place Market and you've seen them throw the fish, and I'll bet many of you have because that's a big thing, right beneath the fish, actually to the side, there's a little ramp, a stone ramp that you go down. And if you go down that ramp and turn to the left, you'll see a wall full of gum, but don't even, I don't know. It's a phenomena that's been around Seattle for a long, long time. Gross if you think about it, artsy if you really push me, but it is a wall full of gum. In that gum wall area are the doors to Unexpected Productions. And they do a lot of work corporately. Now, in their market in Seattle and the various areas around there, there's a lot of big corporate players to work with. And what they do is they talk to people about storytelling. Now, interestingly enough, you may ask, and here you go, why would I care about storytelling? Well, the reason is because to a great extent what we do as safety professionals and practitioners of the New View is to both listen to stories, certainly when we investigate and always when we operationally learn, and tell stories. And that's how we actually guide people to understand the New View so that they're managing consequence, not asking people to not screw up. And so it seemed like it was kind of a good idea to talk to Kent. Plus, he's a super funny guy. You can kind of tell from the introduction. And he has lots to talk about listening and being present and being honest. And all of those things are fundamental, I think, in the New View. So listen carefully to this. I think you'll enjoy this podcast. For me, everything is great. I could not ask for more good things to happen. The year is quickly coming to a nigh, which is freaking me out a little. It is already October. And how that happened, I have no clue. I mean, it seemed like it was just February. And now it's October. But, you know, that's how time works. It's a nonverbal agenda that never stops. And so we have to make our peace with the fact that the world marches on either with or without us. And I think most of us who listen to this podcast are choosing to be on the with side. So good news all the way around. I want you to listen carefully, but mostly I want you to take away some ideas and thoughts about how we use stories to talk about the New View. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kent Whipple to our podcast. So thanks. Thanks for playing along with us. You're really our first sort of improvisational comedian that I think I've had on the podcast.
Well, improv is actually something probably everybody's doing on a daily basis and they don't even realize that they're doing it.
So what is improv then?
Improv, it's, for me, it's about just being in the moment and accepting whatever comes to you and accepting failure. And that has a lot to do with safety. Sometimes we look at as failure as a bad thing. Failure is an amazing teacher. But I think within the context of our society, we've, you know, oh, failure is if you fail, boom, you know, the clouds come in and the lightning strikes. But really, failure shows you what you can fix. Failure is an option.
That's good, actually. Yeah, I mean, whether we want it to be an option or not, it's certainly omniscient in everything we do. That's a big part of what happens.
And so, you know, improv's about making your partner look good.
And nice.
And we should do that in accepting what comes to you, accepting offers that come to you, even though it may not be your cup of tea, you got to accept it. And so it kind of opens up your mind and opens up your options, as well as being present and listening. Improvisers have to listen. And so often in meetings and in everything, we're sitting there and we're not really listening. We're waiting to see how we're going to respond.
Right.
And so we're half listening. And so an important thing for improv that we apply to business and we teach to our business clients is just being present and listening and getting out of your head.
So how important is storytelling? Because I want to come back to listening because I think listening is everything. But let's start with the notion of storytelling because I think we can build a pretty good case that the way we learn operationally in any company – in any activity, safety, security, production, operations, you pick it, has to do with learning, and learning is a function of storytelling, and storytelling is how adults do things.
Storytelling is ingrained, I think, into our DNA. We're always doing storytelling, some doing it better than others. When you come home from work and someone asks you, how was your day? You're telling a story. But more so as improv applies, as we apply into business, is when you're writing a report, you're telling a story, a beginning, a middle, an end. And it is really no more than that. It's not that difficult. But storytelling, proper storytelling is how to engage your audience, how to engage who's reading this report, how to engage the speech to the listeners of the speech that you're giving. I really do think that it's almost ingrained in our DNA. We crave it. We want it. So how many times have you read a bad report?
Lots.
Because, yeah, you know, even if you're giving specific data, you can make it interesting. And it's important to just beginning that out and understanding who your audience is. That's the one thing improvisers are great at. I love watching them because they look at an audience and they can see, okay, there are a lot of kids in this show. We got to keep it up here. We got to do this. So it's really understanding your audience. So when you apply improv, and we teach a lot of improv to businesses, Starbucks, Amazon, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and a whole lot of data and computer folks up here. It's taking even computer ideas and making it interesting, making it a story, and understanding your audience. Am I babbling or does that
No.
Make sense?
And by making it a story, then it becomes easier for people to understand what it is you're trying to say. Is that the point?
That's totally the point. Everything you look at, even a commercial, is a story.
We do something kind of crazy, and I'll try to explain what we do in the safety world. And that is when we investigate an accident or a near miss or a close call, we generally don't tell the story of what happened. We generally tell the story of what should have happened. So our investigations will be these really long, very complex, pretty formal looking documents that talk about what should have done. Worker failed to identify hazardous condition. And in our zeal to tell what we wanted to have happen, we don't tell what happened.
That's the most important thing. Of course, you want to understand what happened in an accident, what happened in a failure. You want to understand that. But identifying what didn't happen doesn't help you fix what happened.
Say that again, Kent, because I think coming out of an entirely different world, that message has more power coming out of your lips than it does out of my lips.
Well, really, just okay to identify everything that didn't happen. We all know what didn't happen. We all know what should have happened. That's kind of a given. But really, the crux of solving a situation or resolving an issue is finding out what did happen. And that's the story. And that's the important message. So, yeah, you can go on and on that they should, this should have happened, they should have done that, they should have done this. Well, woulda, shoulda, coulda, in a million ways. What happened? That's the story.
So how do we do that? Give us some tips. Walk us through your tips for being effective storytellers by being present and listening and really doing what you guys teach people to do all the time in a funny and kind of energetic way.
There's the beginning. So you set up the situation, you provide the exposition. So in your case, it would have been identifying what happened, say, what was it like in the moment in the factory or in the situation. So you're setting up the story, the beginning, the exposition. And then the middle is what happened. This happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And quite often in storytelling, and this is more in a fictional way, but it's kind of applies here, is we talk about how you want to get your characters up a tree and then throw rocks at them, because that's what's interesting. So what is really interesting, Todd, is that what happens to this worker? That's the story. The worker did this and this happened. This happened because of this. This happened because of that, because automatically these poor folks are up the tree. And then you come to the ending. And most important for you guys, or a safety issue, is the ending. This was the result. This is how somebody got hurt. This is what failed. Then you have the story of knowing what to fix.
And it kind of writes itself. But here's here's what's interesting is I think people's intention is to do exactly that. Their intention is to tell the story. How do they understand the being present part? I mean, that's the part that you teach improvisational actors and comedians how to sort of be present. And you said they listen, they're aware, they know their audience. Give me a little deeper dive on the importance of that kind of honest brokerage of what's happening, that being present part.
Well, more often than not, Todd, as we are in our own heads of how a situation goes, we think, you know, this is what should have happened, and we're adding our own editorial. Really, if you get out of your head and listen to the facts of what it is going on at that moment, that is the tenet of what being present is. It's listening not to respond, not to react, but listening to respond.
So tell me the difference between react and respond.
React is, this happened, okay, this exploded, damn it, you're fired. That's react.
Okay.
This exploded, that was terrible, how did it happen, what happened, how can we not let it happen again, that's responding.
And so I always think about if you added the word to medication, you know, react to medication, respond to medication, react to medication means it's going badly. Right? It's got a negative outcome.
Right.
Respond to medication means it's working swimmingly. It's got a positive outcome.
Right. Right. And really, any time that you guys, in your issue, well, it's easy for us when we fail on stage or when we fail because nobody gets hurt. But the same lessons there is when we fail, we go back and why didn't that work? What didn't work about that? And it's not like that didn't work because you did this, this, and this, because that gets us nowhere. But it's really looking at how and why more than the what and the who.
Oh, that's amazing. So what's your background? How'd you get into this work?
By pluck and luck, I studied acting for a while, went to school and studied arts administration. After school, worked in galleries forever, but then I've been with the improv company here. I've been here for almost 5 years now, and it's been an ongoing lesson because I was not an improviser, and so I get to sit and observe all the time. And there's a whole new field that's coming out of using improv for business, and it's called applied improv. There's even the Applied Improv Network. And so we use improv to teach doctors how to respond to patients. We use improv to make executives better listeners and being present, and team building. And I think kind of an important thing that you guys are doing is in building teams. You know, and in building a team, you sacrifice a bit of yourself, or what seems like you're sacrificing a bit of yourself for the greater good, when actually the hive mind is so much better and creates so much more results than you could alone.
So I just interviewed a guy, Dr. Alan Frankfurt is his name, patient safety expert, pretty well known worldwide. And he talked about building a sense of shared mission. That one thing that makes a hospital better is the realization that everybody has and shares the same mission, that their job is to make sure no baby goes home without a mother. He was talking a lot about delivering babies. How does improv help a CEO of a Starbucks or an executive at Boeing? How does improv help them build a sense of shared mission with the workers at the pointy end of the stick? Because what we're talking about is that senior leader is really invested in the story that the worker at the plant floor tells about success and failure, right?
Right. Well, again, it's almost it's the exact same thing in making your partner look good. Is if I trust my employee is smart and wise, and they're trying to make me look good, then I can trust the situation and what happened. If an executive is able to open up and go, oh, I may not know every single thing, and I am only wiser because of the wisdom of everyone around me, I think it makes him a better leader.
Oh, I agree completely. But let's go back to one really key word. How do we build that trust? How do you use storytelling? How do you use improvisational skills to establish trust?
Well, we do it through different games. But the big thing is being able to affirm an idea and maybe accept that I don't know everything. And that's the building of the trust. I mean, it's really almost jumping off the cliff and saying, I'm going to trust you.
I mean, it is kind of jumping off the cliff, right? Because what you're saying is I have to admit I don't know in order to know.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how do you make that safe?
You make it safe just by really the act of listening of and the trust of what someone is saying is right. There's not a magic thing to teach trust. I wish there were a magic jelly bean that I can give you and say, okay, here you go. This is how it's going to work. It really is almost taking that leap of faith and knowing that, sure, you might fail. And guess what? Even if you're working together to tell a story and you fail, that's okay. Work it again.
Do you find when you go in these companies that people aren't generally – maybe I should say it differently. Executive leaders aren't generally very honest with their workers? That sounds meaner than it should. They don't have these open dialogues. They don't have this open, trusting communication with their workers. Maybe that's a better way to say that.
The fun thing is when we're brought into a group or an organization – and we start doing what look like our silly games, about halfway through it, you see the light bulbs popping over people's heads going, okay, I get it. I get it. And then in teaching a game that might just involve how to teach active listening or how that game will teach us to become a better listener, how that game will teach us to be a little more creative, then in doing it, the process alone creates the trust.
But do busy executives want to play a little game?
They do, actually. Well, they always start off as no, or, you know, because nobody wants to look foolish. And we all want to look cool, and we don't want to fail. And I think that's one of the big reasons. That's one of the biggest holdbacks that I see when we do trainings, is that they don't want to look foolish. And then when they realize that it's okay to step out of your safety zone and you're still safe, you're in a group that you'll trust and that trusts you, and that it's okay to expand an idea, and it's okay if that idea doesn't work, then it's almost freeing.
That's amazing. You know, I use little games. I actually use little improv games in class all the time. I do counting games and, you know, I make people list the months of the year in alphabetical order. And I like them because they do two things. One is they telegraph that the discussion we're about to have is going to be different, which I always think has power. But two is it shows the emergent nature of this connectedness that you make with people. So the fact that you're listening and honestly hearing what the people say is an emergent phenomena of the environment you create for that to happen.
Exactly.
And I think that's really, really powerful. And I would agree with you 100%. Executives, I think, in many ways want to play games more than workers do, because executives never get the chance to play the workers. I mean, get to play the games. They play the workers. That was a Freudian slip right there. They play the workers all the time. And that kind of freedom, but it comes back to me, and I guess you're the perfect person to ask this question to, is in order to do improv, you have to let go of control. You don't have a script. You haven't rehearsed. You don't know how the story's going to end. How do you get people to be comfortable in that kind of environment? Because that's exactly where these safety professionals, it's where those pilots, it's where boat vessel captains are. I mean, all those people are in that same position.
So it's to where it's again, I hate to keep banging a drum. It's trusting the leap. It's trusting that, okay, if I'm going to do this with these people and I'm walking out on this tight rope, I'm just going to trust that people are going to take care of me. That's what improv's about.
And I hear you. I hear what you're saying, but how do you get people comfortable with that?
Well, they get comfortable with it with practice.
Let me ask this. How did you get comfortable with that? Maybe that's a better way to ask that.
With practice, because, you know, you start out and it's scary. Because, again, we're ingrained in this whole thing that you got to be perfect, right? You know, especially anything that we do in public that involves public speaking, meetings, you know, we want to look smart and we want to look perfect, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think that you're really right on that. I mean, I sort of make fun of it because I'm way comfortable with the unknown. But I do think people really are really worried about that. They do want to be perfect.
Well, and yeah, because, you know, that's what it's cultural. I think it's almost that we're taught that. And so isn't it even a greater prospect and a greater life in general when you can take a deep breath and say, I'm not perfect. This may not be perfect, but still have the confidence and faith in yourself and those around you that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That wisdom will happen. A meeting will be good or not. For us, a scene will be good or not. But really, it's the trust. It's, you know, you and I right now, here's the perfect situation. You asked me to do this and to speak with you.
Yes.
Because you have trust in my ability and trust in me that I'm not going to do something incredibly foolish or stupid.
Right, right. And also you have things to say.
Right, exactly. Thank you. And so then that's exactly the same thing. That's what we're talking about, is you have to put your trust out to someone. And your trust and faith that they're going to help you look good and that they're going to make you wiser.
That's extremely powerful.
I don't know why, but that's the big thing that we have to get through, is that moment. But the aha moment when we realize that we are wiser through more people, that's the light bulb, that we can take a deep breath and that we don't always have to be solidly perfect. That because I make a mistake does not mean that I'm stupid. It's because I made a mistake, and human beings make mistakes. You know, the old proverbial, that's why pencils have erasers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think, I don't know, maybe in the past 20 years, something happened to where we all think we have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Or we're scared, or maybe it's been longer than that. Maybe I just noticed it. But, you know, that, oh, gosh, I can't do that because if I make a mistake, I'll look stupid. I'll look dumb.
We'll lose money. We'll lose face. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
My dad used to say, I can respect a man who said I made a mistake.
Yeah.
And actually, by making a mistake, that's where the wisdom comes in. And that's what we learn from. But unfortunately, for so long, we've been taught that, you know, you got to be perfect all the time. And that's why so many people lie.
Yeah.
When they make a mistake.
And this little talk, this is a great talk. This is what you guys go out and work with. So you'll work with leaders in really helping them improve their overall performance for everything they do by making them making's the wrong word, by allowing them to understand how important it is to be present, to listen, and to really trust.
Yeah, and that's where and it's funny because when you get into that situation, then all of the proverbial business things that we really love and that business people love, the creativity, the team building, the act of listening, even the collaboration, the communication, that all comes together to then move to storytelling.
Nice.
And all of those simple, silly improv games that look so silly when you see it on Whose Line Is It Anyway or at an improv show, when you use those in business and people become freer, then so much creativity and trust can come out. So we're brought in early in on a lot of meetings with a lot of executives. We'll do the first morning session because we help allow these folks to get out of their heads and to be imperfect. And to feel safe in that imperfection. So then when they go on to whatever they're doing in the rest of their meetings, their monthly, their annual, whatever they're going to do, there's a little more open-mindedness. But because of so many times that we're taught, and, you know, going back to your office, we're always worried, oh, what if I don't do this right? My boss is going to – I'm going to get fired. And if I get fired, I'll lose my house. And if I lose my house, then I'll end up outdoors. And if I end up outdoors, I'll end up poor. And then I'll have to urinate on the street. And that's what we're thinking anytime we think we can't fail. And I guess improv teaches that failure is an option because it is life. It is what we do every day. You know, what's the statistic of how many times we make a mistake a day, each person?
Oh my goodness, it's like 5 to 7 per hour per
yeah,
day.
So that's all of us. Imagine what the really dumb people are doing and how they're screwing up the curve. But if we're all averaging on making mistakes, but then we can't accept it in our systems, then that's what's wrong.
What a great talk. Thank you, Kent. This was great. Okay, one more question. Be funny. Do something funny.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Dance for me, monkey, dance.
No, I wish I could. See, Todd, I wish I could yes to Anya, but I
it's too hard. It's too hard. Thanks for your time, buddy. This was great.
Well, it's been completely my pleasure.
If people want to contact you, how would they contact you guys?
We are at www.unexpectedproductions.org or kent@unexpectedproductions.org.
Well, my friends, what did you think? It is time for you to pass judgment on this podcast. And if you're like me, I bet you enjoyed it. For no other reason than it brings other people into our discussion. Kent's got a really good background in sort of understanding systems, a really good background in the literature, believe it or not. The literature's read a lot. Decker's read a lot. He's really familiar with my stuff. I mean, they think about how systems influence behaviors, and their job is to create an experience for the people in the audience. But mostly between you and I really like the fact that other people can talk to us about things they know. We're not going to invent storytelling. There's already a body of knowledge on that. It's like when people talk about safety culture, you know, there's a whole bunch of knowledge around culture. But we kind of tend to sort of invent it ourselves, and it's often kind of wrong. And so we have to go back, make lots of mistakes, learn from them, go back and pull the books out. It's been a great podcast. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did too. It's just Kent brings a different energy to the conversation, and I like that. I like it a lot, actually. This was super fun. Thanks for listening. It is always great to have you listening to me. And it's good that you put me in your ears while you're jogging or walking or dancing or jumping on a pogo stick or whatever it is you're doing, driving around probably on a plane. I bet you one person at least is on a plane. That's always great, man. It's perfect. If you get a chance and think of some podcast ideas you want to see us cover, my door is always open. Give me a bing, and I'm glad to talk to you about anything. If you think of people that need to be on here, you know, I'm wide open to that. Anybody that is even interesting is welcome. But, you know, we'll do the hard work of trying to apply it to the new view. That's our job on the listening side, not on the talking side. Until then, though, thank you again. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave some comments if you get a chance. That seems to help a bunch. Try to get a bunch of people to listen to it. It's certainly more fun when you can talk about the podcast with your coworkers and other people as well. As always, here are my final comments to you. Learn something new every day. For goodness sakes, have fun, because it is October, the month that needs to have some fun in it. And be safe.
Life was so much easier when I was drinking still.